You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Luis Sainz, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is PJ Vieira. PJ is the managing editor of the UTEP Encyclopedia. He's also with the Centennial Office, and he's going to talk about something awesome that's going to be taking place tomorrow. PJ, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about, because our audience may be wondering, what is the UTEP Encyclopedia and how do you go about accessing it?
Well, the UTEP Encyclopedia is the gift of the Centennial Office to the campus for the celebration of our 100th anniversary. We wanted something that was a living gift that will go on and a place that can be a one-stop shop for people interested in the history of UTEP. And it's just comprised of a bunch of articles that have been written and will continue to be written and rewritten over the next 100 years.
So, PJ, is that the encyclopedia comprised of like some of the articles that we receive by email as far as centennial history?
Yes. And then another charge of the encyclopedia is to verify our history. We've got a great many documents that are part of our history, but we've never really looked at them. We've discovered in the past year a vast treasure trove of documents in Austin that we've never looked at in the last 100 years that tell and really reshape our history, reshapes the narratives and the stories that we tell about this university. And that's something that we are getting out in the encyclopedia as well as other publications.
Well, I know that last year, Keith Erickson and Norma Martinez and myself did Centennial Minutes, and where Keith and some of his staff did the research, and we talked a little bit about the history of UTEP. And as you mentioned, some of that stuff I'm sure had to be verified. So tell me a little bit about how you go about doing this. Did you start this way before? I know that the planning was last year for all this, but tell me, how did you go about researching? What did they tell you about, I want you to do athletics, I want you to do this, I want you to do that? And I know the museum has had several exhibits highlighting different areas of the university. So tell us about this as far as putting the encyclopedia together. Step one.
Well, we started with the sources that already existed. There are such as Francis Fugate's Frontier College, which was the first, say, official history that had been written about the college back in 1964. What we did then is we went through and we parsed that book, and we wanted to put our hands onto every source that Dr. Fugate spoke about in that book. And what we discovered is that once we started looking at his sources, we were getting a different picture than he actually portrayed there. Then we were going through the Board of Regents minutes, and those minutes kept referring to a great many documents that we didn't have or that no other author or scholar had ever mentioned in their work. So that got us scratching our heads, and we thought, well, where are these documents? Well, they certainly weren't here in El Paso. And what we discovered is one of the things we forget about our history is that for the first 20 years, we had a president, or we had a series of presidents, but we generally don't acknowledge them as such. And that was the president of the University of Texas in Austin. And doing some detective work, we finally discovered our lost history. And that's this several boxes of documents that give us a lot of the context and background to the decisions that were made that transformed this university.
Did you encounter some surprises?
Oh, great many surprises. My favorite surprise is that we named two buildings on campus after two individuals who were opposed to the establishment of this university.
What are those buildings?
Well, William Burgess, who was on the member of the Board of Regents at the time, when the bill was passed establishing the school, he sent a telegram to Austin saying the governor has to veto this bill. This is a mistake. We can't have a school here in El Paso. And then the other one would have been Robert Holliday, who we named Holliday Hall after. Actually, he was a board member of the Board of Regents in the late 1920s. And he was of the same ilk. But then again, to give them credit, they were both tremendous supporters of the school after it did get established.
Just out of curiosity, why were these gentlemen opposed to it? Did they think because, you know, we were a border town, the Mexican Revolution had just happened 5 years prior?
You don't put a state college on a border. If you take a look at all of the state schools that were in existence throughout the United States at the time, and primarily the two benchmark schools that Texas was comparing itself to, and that was in California and in Michigan and Wisconsin, those schools are nowhere near a border, and you certainly don't put something on the periphery and on an international border.
Why not?
I would have to think that it was just one of the biases of the time. Politically, you know, even though El Paso was the fourth biggest city in Texas at the time, it just didn't have the political clout. And so most of the schools generally are just put into not necessarily major metropolitan areas, but they generally got put into rural areas and then allowed communities to grow around them. It just didn't see that potential for El Paso.
Now, as the university grew and then it was known as the Texas School of Mines, then it changed to Texas Western, and then the University of Texas at El Paso, tell us about these name changes and how they progress.
Well, we were founded as a mining school, so it just made sense to call it the Texas State School of Mines and Metallurgy. We were one of 30 mining schools in the United States at the time. And I just wanted to point out is that that's one of the things that drives a lot of our research, and that is of all those mining schools that existed at the time, all of those schools today are engineering departments or they're institutes of science and technology. We're the only mining school that transformed into a comprehensive doctoral research university, and that's, to me, is just very astonishing. And that's what drove a lot of the research that we were doing. But we began as the School of Mines, and we kept that mining focus through the 20s. Then we got to 1927 when we expanded our curriculum to include the liberal arts and education and business and more of the sciences. We still kept the name College of Mines through the 1940s when it was finally we were able to change the name to something that was more reflective of the curriculum that we now had at the school. So that's when we became Texas Western. And then we get to the 1960s and the entire University of Texas system is expanding and they're adding more schools and we'd like to think that it was just because we were the Western branch of the University of Texas. We are the second academic school to be added to that system long before any other schools were added to it. But what happened is it was just administrative, more of a housekeeping thing where the Board of Regents decided that all of the schools were now going to become the University of Texas. And that included Arlington, Dallas, San Antonio, et cetera.
A lot of us who work here know the history of UTEP and especially the architecture. But a lot of people who come here or drive by here, they'll say, what a pretty school, what pretty buildings. But they want to know, how did you go to the Bhutanese style? And if you wouldn't mind explaining that in the National Geographic article and all that stuff.
I would love to. Dr. Max Grossman is the acknowledged expert on this topic, but we have shared a lot of things on this. And the legend or the narrative, and I think it's pretty much true, is that the wife of the first dean, Kathleen Worrell, she was a travel writer. And she also, I would believe, would have been a subscriber to National Geographic. And it was the April 1914 issue of National Geographic that had this pictorial exhibit on Bhutan. And when the original main building of the School of Mines burnt down in October 1916 and we had to relocate, she was able to convince her husband, Steve Worrell, the first dean, that it would be a great idea to design these buildings. They would look great up here on this hillside, the Franklin Mountains. And when you take a look at photographs of the school from 1918, 1920, when there's no other buildings around here, it does look a lot like those pictures in National Geographic.
People may wonder why some of the businesses around the area also have that same structure of architecture.
I think it's good business. I think that it's a wonderful design scheme, and it's very unique. It does bring a lot of attention to the school and to the area. So
did they have
not?
To get permission from the University of Texas?
I would not know that. I don't know that, no.
Now, tomorrow, as I mentioned, is a special day, and what you're going to do is you're going to have a special tour of the campus, and you've already given us a little bit of history. that people can go to their computers and check out that encyclopedia. But tomorrow they can actually see some of those buildings. So tell us a little bit about the tour and what people can expect.
The tour is focused on that research question again, is how we transformed into a comprehensive doctoral research university. And we start by going through the layers of history. And the beginning of the tour is at the Rubin Center, and it's right next to the practice mine. We're the only mining school that had a practice mine on its actual campus, and that's very much the reason why we're on this location. Many citizens of El Paso came forward and offered to donate land to the school, but this site was selected because of that mine. So that's a very important aspect of it. Now, what drove a lot of the transformation of this school over the decades was, in addition to the distance from Austin, was compulsory education. You know, believe it or not, 100 years ago, children were not required to go to school in Texas. It wasn't until 1915 and over the course of the next few years that compulsory education laws created a great demand for teachers. Especially here in El Paso, where the school superintendent at the time was pointing out that he needed 100 teachers a year just to fill his classrooms. So that had a tremendous force or shaping force on this school and helping to meet that demand. And that's one of the things that helped us transform from just being a mining school into a much more comprehensive school. And we see that through the tour.
How long is the tour going to be and what time does it start?
Well, the tour starts tomorrow at 11 o'clock. It meets outside Rubin Center. And it generally takes about an hour and a half. There are 7 stops on it, and I make sure that each of the stops is in the shade.
So you would advise people to wear good walking shoes?
Oh, very good walking shoes, a good sun hat, and bring water.
Now, one of the things that people recognize UTEP with, and for a long time, and rightfully so, Coach Haskins, when he won the national title in 1966. And in fact, when I went to Chicago to a Chicago Cubs game, Wrigley Field, I was wearing a UTEP cap, and the guy recognized it, and he goes, "Oh, Texas Western Miners, I remember that game."
Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly put this school on the map in 1966. And it's good to remember that it was more than just a victory for the school and for Texas Western and University of Texas at El Paso to be the only Texas school to have won an NCAA championship. It was also because we broke down a wall, and that was the color barrier that many of the Southern universities still had.
Now, when you are talking about the tour and the walk and the encyclopedia, I'm sure that the Centennial Museum in the past, they featured different aspects of the Centennial, and they're still doing that, correct?
Yes. There are several exhibits that have been in the museum regarding Centennial right now at this time. There's an exhibit that talks about the Latino heritage of the university. And I expect those to continue to change out through the rest of this year. It's also the Welcome Center now for our Centennial celebration. So I invite everybody to go by there and visit it, go through the gift shop, and to get more information about our history.
Unfortunately, some people are, I guess, discouraged by the word that some people will say, well, there's a lot of construction going on at UTEP and you really can't get around. And that's not the case. Everything is pretty well pathed out.
It is pretty good. And the signage is extraordinary. I've seen a lot of very good signs. It's interesting for my tour is because it changes, the route changes pretty much every time I give it, but it just makes it a little bit more exciting.
So you can't follow Yellow Brick Road?
No.
Well, PJ, we want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. We've been visiting with PJ Vieira. He is a managing editor of the UTEP Encyclopedia with the Centennial Office, and he's going to be hosting a tour tomorrow of campus. They're going to meet at the Rubin Center at 11 o'clock. And if you're interested, do they have to make reservations or anything?
No, just be ready to start walking at 11.
And as far as accessing the encyclopedia, they can just go to the UTEP webpage?
They can go to encyclopedia.utep.edu.
PJ, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you for having me.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Pat Petrosky. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.